Hello and welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, and today's show is an absolutely packed one. We go all over the place here in these segments from Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's how I'm spending my Sunday mornings now from 9 to noon on 810. You can always listen live at 810WHB.com on the 810 app or on Sports Radio 810 WHB 810 AM on your terrestrial radio. What I did here is I just pulled together all of the segments from today's show where I talked about the Chiefs or the NFL, which always goes back to the Chiefs because I don't know any other way to do it. And today, the segments and the topics I think were super interesting. We started off talking about the way that I think sports fans have become conditioned in this town to accept mediocrity, even to praise it. I start off talking about why K-State fans are doing that right now with their head basketball coach Bruce Weber. Do not worry, that segment is not about K-State, but it starts there, then goes towards the Chiefs. I also talk about changing those mindsets about mediocrity and how the Browns and the Texans and Brock Osweiler and that trade, I think, might be giving us a little bit of a different way to look at how teams can kind of get out of the cellar or can get rid of some bad decisions that they've made in the case of what the Texans did. We also talk about the risk of Tony Romo. We take all that mediocrity discussion and funnel it into, well, how do you avoid that? And on today's show, I talk about the risk that is required in taking a gamble to improve your team and why the risk of Tony Romo might not make sense for Kansas City, but makes a ton of sense for the Denver Broncos, and why I have no interest in seeing Romo go to Denver. I think that would be disastrous. Plus, we talk again about some quarterback value issues for anything from what the Chiefs are going to be set up to do and how I think the Chiefs are perfectly built for the future, something the Philadelphia Eagles have done. The Chiefs are doing in reverse right now, I think, to their benefit. I think the Chiefs are in a really good spot whenever it comes to putting a young quarterback into this offense, if not this year, the next. Talk about the value of that. Plus, also a little bit later in the show, talk about where Washington is right now. And as everything is falling apart in D.C., Kirk Cousins' value and the way that team is falling apart, I think is something that Chiefs fans need to learn from. Plus, I give up two more names of guys that one has been talked about a lot in Kansas City, one still being talked about kind of for the first time, I think, today perhaps. Joe Mixon, we've been talking about for a while. He has a new thing coming up on him that I think makes him an even easier fit to this Chiefs team. And also, Josh Gordon appears to be on his way back to football. I explain why I think that Josh Gordon is a perfect fit for Kansas City and why I hope the Chiefs are a team that will take a shot on him. There's all of that and so much more, plus the NFL's drug problem. Sean Smith was on Outside the Lines this morning, and I bring in a few clips of that sound to talk about how we just simply don't understand, even us as the most diehard Chiefs fans and the most diehard section of the NFL fandom, how we truly don't totally understand what we're seeing whenever it comes to the NFL and what these guys are doing on the field every single week. All that and much more on Sports Sunday, now brought to you through the Roughing the Kicker podcast. Hope you enjoy.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm afraid that K-State's going to screw this up. Not making the tournament. They're probably going to make the tournament. It should. They held their own, for the most part, in a really good conference. They got the tournament win they needed against Baylor. I'm afraid they're going to screw up Bruce Weber. And I think that this is a problem on a larger scale in sports that I'm just now starting to like see from all angles. It's all kind of coming together all at once. And it's kind of bizarre, but also kind of makes sense. Hang with me here if you can. Franchises all across sports right now are striving for mediocrity. And in some cases, I think it makes sense. But then you look at actually the long-term ramifications of just trying to be good enough, trying not to end up being terrible, and it damages your franchise, it damages your program in a big way. Last year, K-State decided, all right, we're going to make the safe move. We're going to stay average. We're going to give Bruce Weber another season. Then you miss on Jamie Dixon. You miss on Brad Underwood. Both go to Big 12 schools that are worse jobs than yours. Don't fight me about Oklahoma State. K-State's a better job. Certainly TCU. TCU was a laugh. TCU was a joke last year. Last year, TCU was a joke. You say, you know what? We're going to take the safe route. We're going to keep the guy we got. We'll deal with the ramifications of that later. Now they're looking at going to get Tom Green. Or they're going to just keep Bruce Weber another season. We've been watching this happen with the Chiefs for what feels like millennia. For most of us, it's more like a couple decades. The Chiefs went and got Alex Smith whenever Andy Reid and John Dorsey got here. The move at the time was fine. The contract, in retrospect, looks awfully hefty, but maybe it's something they had to do behind closed doors. Maybe Alex Smith was going to say, I'll go get this money somewhere else, because quarterbacks get paid crazy money right now. Mike Glennon just got a bunch of cash. We'll talk about him in a second. But now we're looking at this Tony Romo conversation. People are going, that's a gamble. It's scary. How do you know he's not going to get hurt? We've got Alex Smith. It's fine. I just punched my microphone stand. I got so excited about that. We've got Alex Smith. What's the hurry? What's the rush? We don't need Tony Romo. Mike Glennon just got a bunch of money. He's going to go be mediocre. I forgive the Mike Glennon deal because it's a one-year deal. So it's basically saying for a year, hey, we're going to see what Mike Glennon can do. Hopefully we draft the rookie and groom him behind this guy. That's what the Chiefs are going to do with Alex Smith also, I think. Talk about that later on. But we're in a place now where I think even fans have been intoxicated by this. And this is what bothers me. It makes sense for an NFL franchise to say, all right, we've got to at least be a playoff. We've got to be a playoff contender. Because the Chiefs is a playoff contender, you know, it's fun to watch. It's fun to cover. You're still a part of this whole, like, Chiefs kingdom. And, you know, you're pumped up for Red Friday. And you go out to the games and you fill up Arrowhead and you tailgate. And then maybe you get a win in Houston in the playoffs. And then you lose and you do it again next year. And you get excited for the draft because we're a piece away. We're going to go get a running back. Yeah, we lost Jamal Charles. We're going to go get a running back. We're going to bring him into this offense. We got Andy Reid, John Dorsey. They're going to build us a contender. And then you win 11, 12 games, win the division, get a wild card spot, whatever it is. You go win in Houston, you get bounced in New England, you come home, you do it again. And we've seen this exact storyline at least these last two seasons with a very specifically similar cast of characters. And again, I understand why ownership wants that. If you're a mid-level Power 5 conference basketball, college basketball team, you want to get in the tournament, have a chance to win a tournament game. It's March Madness, man. Anything could happen. Maybe we're VCU. Maybe we have the next big thing. Maybe we're Wichita State. And then, you know, Richmond makes it and they lose and then they move on. But if you're a fan of one of these teams that's been stuck in mediocre mode for so long, you've got to stop defending that. I'm a Chiefs fan. That is something that I'm happy to say. I mean, I'm not, like, super proud because it's like I don't have, like, an Arrowhead tattoo on my arm or anything at this point. I actually do have, just above my belly button, I have a Lombardi trophy, and it says Chiefs Super Bowl 55 champions. I'm very confident. But as a Chiefs fan, I think I'm at the point now where I want more than that. And you should too. And I'm sure you wanted more than this from the Royals. Whenever the Royals went to the World Series, what happened to your expectations of the Royals? You said, well, no, I'm no longer cool with this team not losing 100 games or this team making the playoffs. You win the wild card game, or you win a series. You get a home playoff. I mean, not a home playoff series, but you have home field advantage. Maybe you get a game seven at home. Wait a second. We just made it to the World Series. Let's go win it next year. And then they did. What happened last year? They were a outside playoff contending team. How did that feel? I'm guessing terrible. My answer to my own question is it felt terrible. because you make the World Series, you win it, and then you're outside the playoff bubble. If that happened in the inverse direction, you would have been totally fine with last season. Because you said, oh, look, you know, the Royals are getting some wins. Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs, but they're in good shape for next year. You are so conditioned to these mediocre expectations that you're cool with keeping Bruce Weber. And you don't want to risk it on Tony Romo because you got Alex Smith. What's the rush? Whenever your expectations are changed, your actions change. And you should be demanding that as a fan. Look at what the 76ers did. One of the most controversial ways that a team's been managed in the last decade, maybe. Trust the process. Sam Hinkie gets fired. All of a sudden, Joel Embiid looks really, really good. The Sixers start to come together a little bit. Looks like the process was making some smart moves. But this conventional wisdom of get your best team together that you can this season, just try to make it happen, try to be a playoff contender. This conventional wisdom is poisoning not just franchises, but also fans now. An example of where someone who should know better was poisoned by this was Bill Polian. Bill Polian was on ESPN a little while ago, and they were talking about the Brock Osweiler deal. He's on there sometime earlier this week. Talking about Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler was traded to the Cleveland Browns for nothing, and also packaged with a second-round pick. I think the final details of the deal were Osweiler and a second to the Browns for a fourth. That's not often that you get a quarterback given up and a second-round pick given up for the right to give up a contract. But it's super normal in the NBA. It's a salary dump. Now, I think you can say that both teams have something to be praised for there. The Texans said, wow, we made a big mistake. We got to get this number off our books, I think, because they're going to go try to get Romo. And they're going to have the best team in the AFC South for as long as Tony Romo is healthy. The Browns were not going to use those $19 million in cap space this year because they're not going to win anything this year. What did they do? They picked up a second-round pick for next year. The Browns just admitted to everybody that they are not interested in pretending to be a playoff contender next year. What are they interested in? Building a winning team with their draft picks. Getting value. Getting talent. They have 22 draft picks in the next two drafts. They have 11 picks in each draft. Plenty of those are high picks. Those are not all 5th and 6th and 7th rounders. I think most sports fans should be able to look at what Cleveland did and say, I respect that. I see what they're coming from, where they're coming from. That makes some sense. They're saying, we can't win this year. How do we make ourselves have the best chance of winning in the future? But Bill Polian, NFL general manager, or Hall of Fame general manager, ex-GM of the Colts, was just irate about this move.
Brock Osweiler at $16 million is worth zero. No one.
But that's what we thought before Houston was able to make this trade.
But that's Cleveland. How many games did they win last year?
Not many. That's why they're the first
one.
Let's put it like they're an outlier. Brock Osweiler at $16 million is worth zero. It's an old axiom. The more contract you have to take on, the less we are willing to pay. And by the way, it's guaranteed. Who's going to take that on? 16
million. Well, Seth, people who are saying anything about Brock Osweiler.
That's Cleveland. Put them aside.
He said that Brock Osweiler with that contract was worth nothing. He's worth less than nothing. He was worth nothing minus a second round pick. Cleveland saw that. It became worth something to Cleveland because Cleveland isn't afraid of being terrible this year. You cannot GM a franchise or an NCAA program in fear of moving from mediocre to terrible. It's not a whole lot of fun. I remember the terrible Chiefs seasons. I remember what happened whenever they ended up getting Eric Fisher number one overall, how thoroughly unsatisfying that whole process was. But you know what I'm truly sick of? A bunch of one-and-dones. 8-8 seasons. 9-7 seasons. Beating Houston. Getting a first-round bye and losing. You've got to be willing to roll the dice a little bit. Or you have to get extremely lucky. Many years ago, once upon a time, the New England Patriots took an ex-Browns head coach, made him their head coach, and then got super lucky on a quarterback at the very end of a draft. That's getting real lucky. Maybe they saw something in Belichick. If they saw something in Tom Brady, they wouldn't have waited until the end of the draft to take him. It's blind rage kind of luck. If you're actually trying to make any sort of calculation, you got to say, what's our probability here? What's the probability of this working out? And what can this do for us? Whenever the Chiefs went and got Alex Smith, he had a 95% chance of being Alex Smith. What does that mean? A neutral quarterback who can make some plays, plenty of plays he won't make, he won't even try for because that's just not who he is as a quarterback. That's Alex Smith. A very high probability of him coming in and being Alex Smith, but being Alex Smith means this. Right now, Tony Romo might have a 40% chance of coming in and being the guy that can take you to a Super Bowl. Surrounded by this Chiefs roster or this Broncos roster or maybe even that Texans roster, if he is Tony Romo, the way that we've known him to be, one of the best quarterbacks of this recent era and one of the most underrated because people only watch him in playoff games. And playoff games matter, but you're blaming entire franchise problems on Tony Romo. If he comes in and is that guy, that gamble's worth it. If he comes in and he isn't that guy and you fall flat on your face, you try again next time. For me, as far as Andy Reid and John Dorsey go, and again, I'm not demanding Tony Romo to the Chiefs. I'm going to talk about the Chiefs a little bit later on. I think they should draft two quarterbacks. It's a small gamble with a high reward. Washington did it. It worked out. But I think the only thing that truly, truly irks me in a position of power in sports is whenever an organization, a franchise, a program shows me that it is content with being average. There is no trophy for being 9-7 10 years in a row. It's really hard, but there are plenty of teams who have done that. That's why I have a problem with Kansas up until hopefully this year, because I think they actually are going to do something different this year. Kansas has this problem sometimes. Their fans are really excited about winning the conference, and that's fine. That's good. That's an achievement. That's not Chiefs level. Don't get me wrong there. But you win the conference, and then you fall short come tournament time. That's not good enough. The Chiefs breaking the playoff win drought was fantastic. I enjoyed that very much. It was something that needed to happen very soon. But that's not enough anymore. K-State made the tournament, probably. Maybe they win a tournament game. Look at the bigger picture. That's not enough. What's K-State 4 years from now if they keep Bruce Weber 1, 2, 3, 4 more years? What would K-State have been if they would have gotten Brad Underwood? You've got to take risks when you're making decisions like that. And I feel like we look around right now in sports, and even local sports especially, and we see a real hesitance to take any gambles like that. And Nick, I mean, and not just in local ownership and a lot of fans, in a GM who's in the Hall of Fame because he got Peyton Manning, by the way. Like, I mean, God, the Colts might end up being the most overrated franchise that I've seen in my lifetime, but they've gotten good quarterbacks, number one overall. The best thing Bill Polian ever did was not draft Ryan Leaf. But even Bill Polian, like, just doesn't, like, what I commend what the Browns just did. Just like, if you're going to be bad in the NBA, be really bad. Maybe you end up with LeBron. Maybe you end up with, I don't know, Ben Simmons obviously hasn't done anything yet. He's been hurt. Maybe you end up with a bust. Maybe you end up with Greg Oden. But man, you've got to try. There is no honor or glory in being average every year. I think there is some honor in trying really hard and becoming bad. Then you've got to rebuild. And then your ownership can decide, hey, why did this go wrong? Was it because they took the wrong chances? Because they didn't take any chances? Because they're a bad general manager or a bad athletic director? Sometimes it's going to lead to guys getting fired. I think the Sixers did wrong by Sam Hinkie by firing him before the process had a chance to finish. And we've seen now, it looks like the process is going at least in the right direction. You don't win without taking chances or getting super duper lucky. And I'm not putting all of my chips on K-State or the Chiefs or the Royals getting super duper lucky. Another thing is like how the Patriots always seem to get rid of guys a year or two too soon. Do you ever think they really, really regret that? Do you ever think they're just beside themselves because they let somebody go with 1 year left in the tank instead of giving them like a 5-year deal? Of course not. The Chiefs would have had to have dealt with quite a bit of backlash and second-guessing had they let Tom Bahali walk last offseason. Now Tom Bahali is $9 million in dead weight. Risks come in all shape and sizes. Shape and sizes? Shapes and sizes. Should I make that word plural? I should have. I'm going to go try to figure out what words need an S at the end of them. Whenever we come back on Sports Sunday, we'll talk about more Tony Romo? Don't shake your head at me, Charlie. This is Sports Sunday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Charlie Carlin, other side of the glass, quarreling with me today. Very squirrely. You're like a very lethargic squirrel. I don't know what that is exactly. I think it might just be a dead animal. You're snippy. You're snippy and sleepy. And I gotta be honest, it's very unpleasant. Difficult to work with. Now for something that will really brighten you up, I'm sure. Sure, man. Whatever. Just don't turn my mic off, please. I need this attention. Something that I know will get you back on my side, Charlie. Tony Romo, man. I feel like a lot of you have some Romo fatigue as far as him coming to the Chiefs, so I'm not going to do that. But I want to clarify something very important. I'm still not begging for Tony Romo, although I think everything I just talked about last segment about taking a gamble, taking a risk, I think is also very valid. I'm still not begging for Tony Romo. But I really, really don't want him in Denver. And you don't either. Don't tell me you do. I got some tweets about how he has only played you know, a game and a half in the last century, and he's a brittle man. And I don't want him in Denver, and neither do you. And if you do, you're a fool. Because it's a gamble. It's a big, scary gamble. And I'm not sure that it's the smartest gamble for the Chiefs, because I think they are super well set up to draft a quarterback this year and then to hand it off to that guy in 2018. And Romo might just not work. Maybe he gets another freak injury. Maybe he's beaten around by the AFC West. But if Romo stays upright, he's going to make a team a whole lot better. A healthy Romo would make the Chiefs the best team in the AFC West, would make the Broncos the best team in the AFC West, would make the Texans the best team in the AFC South. But I can hear you already furiously typing onto your phone, 913-381-0810. You said if he's healthy, a healthy Romo. Well, a unicorn at running back would make the Chiefs the best team in the division. Here's why the Broncos don't have to worry about your unicorn analogy that I just imposed upon you. What's the current plan for Denver? What are they currently going to do? Paxton Lynch, Trevor Siemian, fight. It's probably Siemian again. Maybe Paxton Lynch takes a step up. But it's one of those guys. That's what they're going to do at quarterback 2017. Is Tony Romo an improvement? Of course he is. I can't fathom the counter-argument. So what if Tony Romo goes to Denver and gets hurt? What if he's brittle Tony Romo? Then Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch are your new starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos. In the worst case scenario, after getting Tony Romo, you're back to doing what you were already doing. You're back to your pre-Romo plan. I fail to see the problem here. Because this is a case where the Broncos gamble is much smaller than what the Chiefs gamble would be. The Texans gamble was probably trading away Brock Osweiler, and that's not a very big gamble either. In fact, they had to pay to do it, obviously. If the Chiefs were going to go get Romo, they'd have to cut Smith, and more problematically, in my mind, probably pay Romo for 2 or 3 years. And if the Chiefs then took that gamble and then lost it, it would be relatively disastrous. Because you're either then starting Tyler Bray or some veteran or a rookie who probably needs a year to develop, or you're putting yourself in the same pinch the Chiefs are in right now, which is paying a quarterback who's too old or too mediocre too much money to be able to spend elsewhere. Now, in fairness, Alex Smith has his own injury issues, and the Chiefs are aware of that. That's why they paid Chase Daniels, why they paid Nick Foles. The Chiefs have spent as much money on backup quarterbacks as anybody in the league these last couple of seasons. Chase Daniel and Nick Foles were expensive backups. But again, the Broncos don't have to worry about that. The Broncos can just say, all right, let's see what we can get here. And man, if they get what Tony Romo has been, hell, what we saw from Tony Romo for a little bit at the end of last season. If they get that guy, you can wrap up the division. And then the Chiefs and the Raiders are fighting for a wild card spot. I don't care for that. I'm not a huge fan of that setup. I'm guessing you're not either. But a bunch of you are still having this fight. Every week I talk about Romo, which might be your problem with me. But every week I talk about Romo for 10 minutes. And somebody calls in and says, why is Tony Romo a god? How do you think he's a better quarterback than Trevor Siemian? How dare you? And I can't even fight that anymore without just getting, like, upset and confused. And I think it goes back to what we talked about last segment. You as a fan are a little bit afraid of seeing your team take a gamble because you're really afraid of going back to the early 2010s. You don't want that again. You don't want to end up with Tyler Palco throwing passes for you. You don't want to get the first overall pick and take a tackle again. I get it. But you should be more afraid of being the third best team in a good division. He absolutely was. Was that on the air, Charlie, or was that just to me? Okay, I'm pretty new at this thing. All right, so I got to explain something. Because I'm guessing most of you listening haven't been on radio. Charlie has two buttons that he can use to talk to me on his side of the glass. We're in two separate rooms. There's a glass separating us, which is good because, again, today he's been very angry today. He's been throwing his feces at me, but it keeps just splattering on the wall. He squeegees it down during the break. And Charlie hit the button. There are two buttons. One button will just go straight into my headphones, and I will just hear Charlie say something to me. The other button is just turning on his microphone, and the whole world hears what Charlie says. Whenever I'm on that side of the glass, I try to always use the latter because I want people to hear my voice because I'm needy. Charlie, a much humbler man, just hit the other button to just tell me into my ear, "Hey, Tyreek Hill was a gamble." And I responded as if we'd all heard that because I'm not used to being with a person who would use the whisper button whenever the out loud button would work. But yes, Tyreek Hill was the gamble. And they dealt with the backlash. He was... Thank you, by the way, Charlie, for your great point that no one heard your voice on. He was a gamble with baggage in a way we might have never seen in the modern NFL. Like, there's no video, so we kind of all let that go a little bit. But if we had video of Tyreek Hill, he probably wouldn't be in the league. That kind of gamble worked out. The Seattle Seahawks, whenever they had signed Matt Flynn to a reasonable contract, but also drafted Russell Wilson and gave Russell Wilson the starting job, that was a gamble. Those are the kinds of gambles that set you apart or set you back. But I would rather see the Chiefs start taking gambles in fear of being set back than to see them continually be stuck mired in mediocrity.
Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Joshua Briscoe, the incredibly grouchy Charlie Carlin, running the board. I want to get into a little bit more of your psyche at some point today, Charlie, because I am, like, truly distracted by how much of a bad mood you're in right now. And I've seen you in, like, a lot of different types of bad moods, like bad moods because you're angry at other people, or bad moods because you're tired, or bad moods just because you haven't had enough coffee yet. But, like, today is, like, a special brand. Like, you are just, like, unpleasant. And I don't know what made you this way. I don't know who hurt you, but I want to hurt them for you to make this better.
Well, I appreciate that. But no, it's just pure, just like I said before, this slap happy, tired, don't really know what's going on because I haven't slept. I've slept maybe 8 hours in the past 5 days, but, you know.
That's got to be an exaggeration,
well.
Right?
I don't know. Pretty close.
Okay, well.
The Big 12 tournament. And FanFest was a good time, though.
Right.
It was
yeah,
a good time.
I know you were
work, but it was a great time.
I know you were working, like, extra time for that. So I acknowledge that there's something going on there. I just feel like you are a broken man. A couple of things around the NFL happened this week that I think are interesting. I also have a couple other things with the Chiefs that I'm curious about to try to get some, like, opinions on. So if you want to call into the show and talk about, then we can talk about the Big 12. We can talk about the Selection Sunday coming up, the NCAA tournament, the Chiefs. 913-3810-810. We can talk about Drew Butera's thinly veiled attempt to get more playing time. It's all on the table. But the one thing that I'm genuinely most interested in getting, like, a fan pulse on is what the Chiefs have done with free agency so far. Because if I say, what have the Chiefs done in free agency so far, I think most of you would say, what do you mean? Nothing has happened. The answer to what has happened so far is nothing. It's just blank silence. But I think if you're going to say that, I need you to also come at me with what they should have done instead. Because not only is the cap situation right now for the Chiefs so dire that they just restructured James Winchester's contract to free up like $500,000 in space, they've got no one to go get. The Daniel Sorensen contract, the most recent thing that happened, 4 years, $16 million, about half of that money is guaranteed. So it's 2 years, $8 million, whatever. The Chiefs, if they want them, have their safeties locked up for several years. The value they're getting from Ron Parker is tragic. And the value they're getting now for Daniel Sorensen, very good as well. Eric Berry is not a value, but he's Eric Berry. You're just praying to God that he keeps being Eric Berry for the duration of his contract. I have Justin Houston PTSD right now, where I'm a little bit afraid to expect greatness from a player who's getting paid like greatness, because bleep happens. But we're all being hopeful about Eric Berry. And obviously, Justin Houston, it's not that he got worse at football, it's that he's been hurt a lot. So we hope Eric Berry stays healthy, etc. Safeties, locked up. Offensive line, locked up. This free agency period, they paid LDT. They signed Eric Fisher to an extension last season. They signed Mitchell Schwartz as a free agent last year. They've drafted their guard and center of Mitch Morse. Mitchell Schwartz is the tackle. Mitch Morse, the center. And then also Parker Anger seems like he's poised to return and to be the starting other guard, the starting left guard opposite LDT next year. Plus, you got Zach Fulton for one more season for $1.5 million. The offensive line locked in. Now, the linebackers, you've got some questions, but they've got a bunch of money in Justin Houston. They've got like $8-point-something million still tied up this year, guaranteed to Tom Bahali. D Ford's going to have to get paid soon or going to have to be let walk very soon. I don't see more money you can spend on the outside linebackers. Inside linebacker, the one rumor of the place they've had, a guy they've been in contact with, that they're going to address that. Because they're probably going to let Josh Malga go, it seems like. Offensive side of the ball, you've got your receivers. You're not going to go. You cannot afford Alshon Jeffrey. And frankly, I think that'd be a poor use of your money. You could afford Alshon Jeffrey if you had a rookie quarterback instead of Alex Smith. That's what I look forward. That's what I look to for next year. Next year, whenever Terrell Pryor and Alshon Jeffrey come off of their one-year deals, and the Chiefs are starting Pat Mahomes at quarterback, and you want to make sure that Pat Mahomes has every weapon possible, then you can pay Pat Mahomes and Alshon Jeffrey less than what you were paying Alex Smith. Again, that's the value of having a rookie contract quarterback. They have to get a running back from somewhere, but I don't think you want them to cut Jamaal Charles and then to go sign Adrian Peterson. It's the same problem. They're 97 years old, and their knees are broken. So first of all, I don't know who you would have wanted. The amount of plausible people to pull in, it's a very small pool. But the biggest thing here is the Chiefs lost a lot of flexibility in free agency because they signed their guys. Like, first of all, they made the move of getting Eric Berry, never even having to use the franchise tag on him this year, getting Eric Berry. If they signed the equivalent of Eric Berry in free agency, you would just have things running down your leg. Like, you would be wetting yourself. But they just keep Eric Berry. And then it's like, all right, good. They did the thing they needed to do. They kept Eric Berry. If they went out and signed a guard for LDT's money, we would have the reaction we had to Mitchell Schwartz last year, which is like, oh, look at that. They went out and got a guy. Solidify this offensive line. Nice work. You can cross that off the draft board. Also, by the way, all the positions that I've listed that they don't need players at now, you can take those positions off the draft board. Now you can invest those high picks in a quarterback, in a running back, in an inside linebacker, and then whatever place you think you're going to need value at soon. Maybe a nose tackle. But the Chiefs don't play a true nose that often, so that's going to be some sort of hybrid defensive lineman, I'm sure. But the larger point here, the Chiefs lost a lot of flexibility for what they can do in free agency this year. They lost a lot of cap space, a lot of cap flexibility. And they don't have to go find Travis Kelce because they re-signed Travis Kelce. Guys that they know better than any other team knows. Guys that are already a fit in the system. Guys that have had their tryouts on the team and have shown themselves to be worth a hefty sum. They're just signing and keeping their guys. I don't know what else you could possibly ask for. Yesterday, I was running the board for Cody on Sports Saturday, and Cody, we never really got to it because we teased the Daniel Sorensen contract like 15 times. But Cody was saying, like, hey, I have a couple of things I think the Chiefs missed on in free agency. And I wish we would have gotten to that discussion because I can't find that guy. Like, would Alshon Jeffrey be a nice fit on this team? Sure. Sure, you'd love to add another receiver. But he's getting paid like $12 to $15 million this year. I can't remember the number off the top of my head. I think it might be $14. The Chiefs simply can't do that. You know, you can say, well, you can make cap money, cap space, sure, but what are you going to do? You're going to, like Cody said, you cut Anthony Sherman, you cut Ja Reed. At that point, you've made like $5.5 million worth of cap space. And also, I am not going to defend paying Anthony Sherman a ton of money because he's a fullback, but he's also a huge piece of the special teams. And that's something the Chiefs obviously invest very heavily in. But you try to have your special teams be as cheap as possible. But so what do you want to do to go get Alshon Jeffrey for 1 year? You want to cut Dustin Colquitt and Sherman and Reed and then Zach Fulton, and then you still need more space. You run out of space. That's what the cap is here for. It's to help with parity. And if you want Alshon Jeffrey, let's look at what the Eagles just did. And why also I think the Chiefs are doing the exact right thing right now. Now, this is all going to be validated or invalidated come draft time. But as far as what they do, the free agency before the draft, whenever they need to draft a quarterback, so far, so good. Here's why. The Chiefs are building backwards right now. And I think for the first time in my life, they're actually one, maybe two pieces away. And we say that all the time. We constantly say, like, oh, the Chiefs, you know, go get Jeremy Maclin. They're Jeremy Maclin away. Or, oh, go make sure you get Eric Berry locked up. You know, he is the one piece away that you are from being a real contender. I think the Chiefs actually are now, for the first time. Let's use the Eagles as an example here. We're talking about Alshon Jeffrey. Let's talk about the Eagles. The Eagles last year drafted Carson Wentz. And they brought in some weapons for him, like Nelson Agholor and some other name. He was like relevant in fantasy football for like 50. Jordan Matthews. Nelson Agholor and Jordan Matthews were the weapons they brought in, but that was insufficient for Carson Wentz. But they let LeSean McCoy go. Jeremy Maclin obviously left to Kansas City before Wentz got there. But now Carson Wentz has Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith to go with Nelson Agholor and the guy whose name I just remembered and forgot again, and Jordan Matthews. I would bet on them now drafting a running back, bringing in a free agent, something to help with that backfield, which is right now basically Ryan Matthews. And now they can afford to do any of that because they got their cheap quarterback and they're now building around him. What the Chiefs have done, and what the Chiefs have sort of built in an inverse way here that now works to their advantage, the Chiefs have a strong team already. They've built a team. Now they need to drop in their cheap value rookie quarterback, second-year quarterback, and then you use that remaining cap space to add another playmaker. So maybe it's to pay next year's Alshon Jeffrey, to pay Terrell Pryor, or DeSean Jackson, or Pierre Garçon, guys who went in free agency this year. Or maybe it's to pay Mitch Morse, because he shows up to be an all-pro center. You gain that kind of flexibility whenever you end up working around a cheap quarterback. But the Eagles had to do it the long way. The Eagles had to get their cheap quarterback and then start to pull these pieces together. That's a pretty long process. And in that process, you can really mess up your rookie quarterback. I am willing to say right now, Jared Goff is never going to be justified of a first-round pick, a first overall pick. He was terrible last year on a terrible team. It seems terrible. What would have happened if you would have taken Jared Goff this year, dropped him behind Alex Smith, had this season play out, and then put him into next year's Chiefs roster, which is basically as is currently constituted, plus another tight end? I think you're starting to look at Jared Goff very differently. I think he still has a lot of the mechanical problems that he's always going to have, and are some of the reasons that he was a bad number one overall pick, and the Rams shouldn't reach for a quarterback in that exact spot, but you have to take that gamble. That's a place where that gamble is probably not going to work out, but you've got to take that gamble. But if you put that guy in a team that actually has a structure to it already, maybe even like the Chiefs already has some pieces that are like wallpapering in this house that you're building. Like, you're just there to make your team look good. You are making everyone else look foolish with Tyreek Hill. Whatever guy comes in after Alex Smith is going to have a really good time. And even if you draft, I'm just using Pat Mahomes because he's the guy that Matt Verderam sold me on a few weeks ago, so I keep using Pat Mahomes. It could be literally any rookie quarterback that Andy Reid decides he wants. But you drop Pat Mahomes in here and give him $14 million of more weapons or of a better defense. If Pat Mahomes can be what Alex Smith is, you are in the black. Because if you were to tell me that you could get Alex Smith right now, literal Alex Smith, actual real-world Alex Smith, and he would take a $15 million pay cut, I would be way less antagonistic about Romo or a young quarterback. Because then he would become value. What you really hope, though, and the place where I think you actually have a chance for growth, and this actually can happen, is you get your value in a young guy who's an unknown. And then there's also the chance of that guy becoming something bigger. Because Derek Carr is not just a value for the Raiders right now. He's a really good quarterback. Russell Wilson wasn't just a value. He's a top-level quarterback. Cam Newton was a value for a little while. Now he's an MVP. That's how the drafting of a quarterback becomes so important. It's outside of the value, which is so hard to find anywhere else. It's also the potential. And the Chiefs are perfectly coordinated right now to actually maximize on that process. It's right there. It is right in front of them. Now, I guess you have to just make sure you get the right guy. But again, as I've said last week and the week before, and maybe the week before that, for all I can remember, you maximize your chances of getting the right guy when you take a couple of them. Washington went RG3 in round one and Kirk Cousins in round four. Take Mitch Trubisky in round one and take Brad Kaya later. Let those two guys battle for it, because sometimes you get it wrong. There's going to be a quarterback in the fourth round that's better than whoever the Chiefs end up taking in the first or the second. That always happens. Give yourself more chances. I think this makes total sense, but I'm occasionally baffled by the reaction to things that I think make total sense. Charlie, if I may peel back the curtain, you were just taking a phone call a moment ago. Caller did not choose to come on the air. What were you guys talking about?
He was just saying that there's every year there's like two to three teams that are favorites or like that are likely to make the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl. And
okay.
He's just wondering, other than drafting a quarterback and getting a better quarterback or whatever, how do the Chiefs become one of those two to three teams? Like, they just never are.
Right. Like, I think this is it. I think we're all kind of under the impression that you have to have Aaron Rodgers to be one of those teams. But as we saw with the Ravens with Joe Flacco, whenever the Seahawks had young Russell Wilson, cheap Russell Wilson, you can do it with value at quarterback also. You can build a dominant defense, a versatile offense, and have it be centered around a good, cheap quarterback. You cannot do it with Ryan Fitzpatrick, a mediocre, expensive quarterback, or Alex Smith, a good, expensive quarterback. You can't get elevated to that level by spending that much on a position where you're not getting any value there. And it's all about value. I mean, if you wanted to say, you know, you can also do some of that by, say, instead of paying Justin Houston $100 million, getting that production out of, you know, third-round pick Justin Houston. That value is everywhere, but it's easiest to get at quarterback, and it's another incentive to draft a guy that has a chance at being something better than what you currently have. So you can find value in other places, but it's never as impactful as it is at quarterback. to do it at other positions, you've got to get like Marcus Peters and Travis Kelce and third round pick Justin Houston. And the Chiefs did that, obviously, but that's kind of spread out over a few drafts. You got to do it at quarterback. You pretty much got to do it at quarterback. The way the Broncos did it is the one that I can't explain. The Broncos Super Bowl is the one that is beyond my understanding. Because they were paying Peyton Manning real money. He wasn't very good. He, you know, had Peyton Manning's brain. He was like, did you ever watch the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon like from the 80s? Peyton Manning was like Krang, that brain in the stomach of like that big like meat machine, that like just buff robot. Peyton Manning was Krang and won a Super Bowl. That defense was dominant though. And I could like go through that salary cap of that year's Broncos team and figure out how they had the value to keep all those guys. Because that's where it ends up. You're able to keep Chris Harris and Aqib Talib, and you get Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware and Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders and Peyton Manning and the offensive line. And we've talked about several times, just as like in Chiefs related conversations that I've had through the last couple of years, John Elway always seems to do like crazy things with the cap. That's how that happens. You build crazy talent. If you want to do it without cheating, like I'm sure John Elway has been doing, then you've got to do it with a cheap quarterback. Damn you, John Elway.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
I have a millennial-sized attention span.
On Sports Radio 810.
Because there's still a naked baby on the microphone across from me.
WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. Sports Radio 810 WHB. There was, in fact, a naked baby on the microphone across from me a while back. It's disappeared, though. And no one knows. Charlie is gesturing at me saying, no one knows where it is? Like, have you asked around?
I have not asked around, okay. But I mean, I'm genuinely curious where
me too.
It is.
Yeah, like, does it just disappear? Does someone, like, pocket it?
Which is a whole nother strange question, story,
Curtis,
whatever.
Has it.
Yeah, that I could see that.
I don't know why. But I think Curtis has it. You've read something to me over the break. Do you have that headline still? Read that to me again. Read that to the world.
Okay, so somebody apparently edited all 46 hours of Breaking Bad, the whole series, into one feature-length film. And this article says it's really good. Yeah, so it's a two-hour movie from the whole series of Breaking Bad.
Just 2 hours?
Yeah, just 2 hours. 2 hours and 7 minutes, to be exact. And, yeah, it I guess it just takes a bunch of scenes and mashes them all together. And
I can see how they could have done that. But, like, I went and saw Logan yesterday.
I heard it's fantastic.
It was good. I went and saw Logan yesterday, and it was like 220 or something. It's a long movie.
Which is surprising for superhero movies, because they're usually like at least 2.5, if not like 3
right,
hours.
Are, yeah, Batman vs. Superman, you know, is 7 hours long, and at least feels like it. I've seen 3 episodes of Breaking Bad. Like the first 3, like not just 3 random episodes. I'm not a monster. But I watched the first 3 episodes for a class project, like 2 years ago.
See, that's almost even worse. That you've seen the first 3 and just didn't keep watching versus seeing like
do,
random
man.
3.
I'm not Beards. I can't I can't binge 12 hours of Netflix a day. I've got to prepare to do a terrible radio show. I've got school to do. I've got to manage a newspaper. I'm a busy boy. I can't just watch.
You say busy boy one more time.
I'm a busy boy. There's nothing that gives me quite the subtle joy that no one else could possibly share that I get whenever Charlie reaches up to one of the keyboards in the control room and hits the button that, like, marks to save something that I just said. Because then that gets used, like, one of the liners. Just play one of the Kaepernick liners right now, Charlie. just pick one. And this is what happens whenever I say things that I shouldn't have said during a show.
This is Sports Sunday.
When I talked about the Chiefs and Colin Kaepernick, you guys loved it.
With Joshua Briscoe.
A few selections from the Facebook comment thread of the podcast includes, I heard this live and I thought his argument supporting the idea was inarticulate. He just wants attention because no one knows who he is. More on that later. Joshua Briscoe is an idiot. We don't want nor need an un-American moron as our quarterback.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's what happens. My favorite one is the one Reggae told to stick my head in an oven. And just seeing like the lights behind Charlie's cold dead eyes turn back on for a moment so he can mark me saying something about being a busy boy is rewarding in a way that it probably shouldn't be. The first few shows, I didn't say anything dumb. The first like two or three shows.
I was surprised. You did a pretty good job with that.
What happened, right? Those first two shows were like pretty good.
You got too comfortable, I guess.
I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel more comfortable.
Are you ever?
I think I'm always the most confusing combination of uncomfortable and comfortable. I guess here's why. Is because I find myself being relatively comfortable in uncomfortable situations. So I'm always like seeming anxious and kind of batty. But on the inside, I'm like, this is where I belong.
You're comfortable when everyone else is uncomfortable.
I'm most comfortable when everyone else is uncomfortable, for sure. Yeah, I'm on my school's improv team. I love that because first of all, it's like a dozen people who are all that same way, who are all like they just want everyone else to be as uncomfortable as possible, because that's when we shine. Whenever you can get a small audience to like groan all together, it's like getting Madison Square Garden to stand up and applaud for you. It's that kind of thrill. Maybe I should be more uncomfortable as a person. Maybe I should feel that more. I don't think I'm capable. I think I missed that. I think whatever happened to me in my childhood. Maybe I missed some like social cues in my early homeschooled years, and I never developed what it is to feel discomfort. As long as I'm the one causing the discomfort. Speaking of discomfort, you want to go Josh Gordon or Joe Mixon next? I'm gonna spin the wheel, Charlie. There's only two options on it. Just tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Tick, 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 tick. Josh Gordon. This one's easier.
Oh, I was hoping the other one.
We'll spin it again in a minute. With only one option left on the wheel. We'll see where it lands. Josh Gordon tweeted a couple days ago, blessed be the football gods. Which I think means he's coming back. Literally none of you should fight me on this. There's not a player on the planet I'm more interested in having just a quick flyer on than Josh Gordon. Because, man, at his peak, he is incredible. I mean, he was doing, like, inhuman things whenever he was on the field. Also, his offense, you can fight me on this if you want, his offense was insanely minor compared to what we've been conditioned to. Josh, you know what Josh Gordon loves? Smoking pot. You know what Josh Gordon never did? Like, punched his fiance. So I think I'm cool with it. I can live with that. I'm not, like, trying to hang out at Josh Gordon's house. It's not really my speed. But it's his. So that's fine. Now, it's not fine because he gets him in trouble with the NFL. But as far as, like, personal morality, I am not bothered by Josh Gordon's weed affinity. Now, he has to keep it together for the NFL. That's obvious. It would be very frustrating to take a chance on him and then to have him fall apart again and end up, you know, taking a piece away from the Chiefs a few games into the season if he makes it that long. But, man, what he is at his peak is so incredible, and the risk would be so low. This is another instance of that gamble. But with this, what's the gamble? The gamble is maybe thinking you're going to have him and then losing him, but even then, you're a fool if you think that you're locked into having 16 games of Josh Gordon. You're just hoping. Everything you get from Josh Gordon would be a nice little bonus, a nice little boost to your season. Anything falls apart, fine. You tried and it didn't work out, and Josh Gordon's career is over. But if he's going to pull it together, this is, I think, probably genuinely his last shot. And I would be thrilled for the Chiefs to be the team to give that to him.
Yeah, I'm all for it. Because, like you said, at his peak, he was just, oh man, fun to watch. He's just insane.
This isn't an instance of saying, like, I would take a shot on Johnny Manziel. Like, if Andy Reid looked at Johnny Manziel and was like, you know what, I think there's a chance he's actually can play NFL football, I'd be like, okay. Give him $12 and bring him in and see what's going on in his head. That's fine. Go ahead. Fine. But we don't know if he's any good or if he's any better. Josh Gordon, he looked like a Hall of Famer for like 12 weeks. And that's not a tiny sample size, and it's not like some unknown pitcher coming into the game and then throwing it underarm or throwing it submarine style and then just confusing everyone, and then all of a sudden, you know, everybody figures him out and it's just over. Josh Gordon was doing truly special things. And I would love for his redemption tour to come through Kansas City. I think it's a perfect fit. And, man, if you believe in Andy Reid being able to, like, help guys out, help keep guys on the straight and narrow or whatever, it makes sense for Josh Gordon, too. Can you imagine him being on the field with Tyreek Hill and Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce? Like, think about that for a second. You got Josh Gordon out left, Maclin out right, Hill in the slot, Kelce at tight end.
That's like Packers level of weapons.
Oh, I mean, the Packers were thrown into, like, a guy named Geronimo by the end of the year.
Which, by the way, the Martellus Bennett signing, whoa.
Yeah, huge news, giant. We got to restart the show to go back to that. But that, you know, makes sense for them. He needs a tight end. The place where you can rope me in, Charlie, where you can rope me into overly serious sports talk is going to be NFL. As long as this show survives, as long as I am talking to a microphone, I'm going to have, if I ever get, like, on some sort of, like, pseudo-political topic and some caller doesn't like it and he calls in, don't call in and push me on the political topic because I will fight you till the show's over. But if you call in and you're like, hey, listen, man, I really enjoyed your conversation about Colin Kaepernick and what it means to take a knee during the national anthem. That's been really great so far. What do you think about Zach Fulton's value? 180. I'm walking the other direction. I'm walking straight towards Zach Fulton's value. So if you get sick of me talking about anything other than football, call in and let's talk football, and you will get me. I will be trapped. In fact, I just forgot what we were talking about. I got so excited about Zach Fulton. Josh Gordon. It would be like Madden-like, is what I was going to say. It would be like building a Madden roster that would be so unrealistic. Like, even Alex Smith, and that would be good. The other thing is Joe Mixon. I'm going to spin the wheel. Joe Mixon. Here we go. Not going to talk about him off the field right now. I'm going to talk about something that I saw on Twitter that I thought was really interesting for Chiefs fans who forgot something that made Jamaal Charles so great and such a great fit in this scheme for the time that he did have with Andy Reid. I saw a tweet talking about Joe Mixon's ability to pass block. And it came with some stat, and I've since lost the tweet because I'm a disorganized person. But Joe Mixon not only makes all the sense in the world, like as a back out of the backfield and as a pass catcher and as a runner, but also, apparently, his ability to pass block is something that we've missed. We've just forgotten to acknowledge, which happened to Jamaal Charles all the time. We just forgot how good he was at that. And Joe Mixon is continuing to look like a better and better fit with the Chiefs. Although now he's popping up in a lot of people's minds as a second round pick, and I think that's a high value. And for the Chiefs, it would be the end of the second round or the end of the third round, unless, I guess, yeah, it would be the end of the third round still also. I would have a little bit of a hard time seeing them go there in the second. Not because of off-field stuff, just because I think the value there is starting to move very quickly.
He's had a great combine, hasn't he? Ran a 4-3.
No, he wasn't at the combine. He had a pro day.
That's what I meant. Okay, that's what I meant.
Yeah, and all the reports out of everything about him has been tremendous, except for that video of him punching a woman in the face. Let's go to the phones. JT, you want to talk about Josh Gordon? JT, welcome to Sports Sunday.
Hey, guys. Sounds like you're having an exciting day today. I felt like I was listening to two guys playing fantasy football in the office earlier.
That's what happened accidentally.
The Josh Gordon thing. Because, look, man, the reason that you can't have Josh Gordon is that he can handle himself while he's smoking weed, but can the four other teammates that decide to join him that wouldn't have done it otherwise? And probably not. So you have to, because, I mean, look, if you've ever hung around with people who smoke weed, and I have, they eat a lot of Cheetos, and they don't show up for practice on time, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's not the kind of thing that you want in the middle of your locker room. You can absolutely have a guy who will beat the shit out of somebody on a freaking whim, because that's...
You can't, JT, you can't say that! Charlie had to go hit the dump button. We lost JT. I don't know how the dump button works, because I can't see the comeback. Are we back? Are we alive, Charlie? We're alive. Okay, great. JT curse. JT, I'm so disappointed in you. He calls in all the time. Dang it, JT. We were talking about Josh Gordon smoking weed. And how weed can become a social activity, but beating the bleep out of your significant other is not a social activity. Which I think is a great clarification to make. Watching Charlie scramble for the dump button was the most distracted thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It's just like a flurry. He's like, I was like, oh no, he said bleep, and then Charlie was just like, Charlie, you know what you look
complete
like?
Complete deer in the headlights.
You like... know what you looked like? No, you looked exactly like the nanny in that BBC video. Where the kids go in to their dad is like Skyping to BBC about South Korean politics because the president resigned, and the kid just comes like swaggering in, like throwing his arms around, and then the baby comes in like in a scooter and just like scoots in. I wish this was a TV show for those like 4 seconds, because I can't really like make the sound of a scooting chair, but I can do it. And then the nanny comes in. If you haven't seen this video, just search like BBC kid and you'll find it. And then the nanny comes flying in and just like a car, like a bumper car careening off a wall, just like hits the door frame and like spins around like John Elway getting that helicopter hit, and like grabs one of the kids and just like throws it out through the window, and then grabs the other one and comes back and shuts the door so ferociously the door comes back open again, and then shuts the door successfully. All of this unfolding over like a painfully slow like 35 seconds while the dad is just trying to stiff arm the one kid in the face. That nanny was you just then, Charlie.
I love that summarization right there.
It's perfect, right?
But my favorite part of that video was the very end when she's like, when the door reopens and she's crawling to reach for the door. She's just like,
yes, ah. That was the moment. Like, that was you actually reaching the dump button, because your first move was just like both hands out and like waving them around like the inflatable guy outside of a used car place, and then flailing over towards the button and then diving and stretching out, hitting the button, finally not only saving the show and saving the station, but also keeping that kid out of the BBC.
This is Sports Sunday.
When I talked about the Chiefs and Colin Kaepernick, you guys loved it.
With Joshua Briscoe.
There were flocks of people claiming that this would be the thing that would end the Chiefs fandom.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I'd rather have Casey Wolf under center than that D-bag. Welcome back to Sports Sunday. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Tweets currently pouring in my Twitter account, at JB Briscoe. John was concerned that I was serious about Juju Terra intentionally trying to end Salvador Perez's career so he could get more playing time. That was, in fact, a joke. And Brad says, you can't do stand-up comedy or improv without some sort of screw loose upstairs. I qualify. Clearly. I make bad decisions. And like it when other people are uncomfortable. Which is why sometimes having Charlie run the board is the perfect thing. Because I feel like you are a good person to make be uncomfortable.
People love doing it.
Yeah. We had this idea a while ago through the previous iteration of Sports Saturday of what we could do if we sent Charlie like out to do interviews at like Chiefs camp and stuff, but throughout the course of the interview we just do terrible things to Charlie and see how players would react. So like Charlie's talking to LaRon DuVernay Tardif, and then in the middle of the interview I come in a ski mask and just tase Charlie in the neck. What would LDT do? Would he give you like CPR? Would you be conscious? Do you need CPR after getting tased? Probably not.
Like Steve-O or whatever, one of the Jackass guys with the razor coming up behind you.
I don't even know what that... Oh, no. I don't even know what that is.
Oh, I can't remember which one it was.
Okay.
But it was just like the, you know, the... Jaws sound.
Oh,
and they
yes.
would just like
right.
show the razor and they would just go up and buzz somebody's back
that's
of
perfect.
The head. Something like
yeah.
that.
You're talking to Zach Fulton for some reason. I start shaving your head. How does Zach Fulton react to that? What if I get a super soaker and just start like trying to spray you while talking and see if I can interrupt your questions? How do you think Albert Wilson would respond to that? I think that's a great idea. The problem is how it escalates. The logical escalation of it is like squirt gun to like super soaker to like shaving your head to tasing you to like all right now this week on Charlie talks to mid-level Chiefs players while talking to Kendall Reyes. We're going to tar and feather Charlie Carlin.
I was going to say, which Chiefs player would have the best reaction?
I want Chris Jones.
Oh, yeah.
I want you to get tarred and feathered in front of Chris Jones.
I can't even be mad.
Because
his reaction would be priceless.
Yeah. What a video. Yeah, that's what I want. If you want to call into the show and talk about anything we've talked about so far, something we haven't yet touched on, literally that means any topic, I'll try. 913-3810-810 is the phone number, 913-3810-810. Let's go to Storyteller. Storyteller, welcome to Sports Sunday.
Hi, Josh.
Hey, how are you?
Comment about Josh Gordon,
sure.
Nixon, and Kansas State.
Okay.
I like the thought of Josh Gordon. Signed to a 1 year with incentives. And
yep.
His all-pro year, he had Brian Hoyer and Brandon Whedon. So
yeah.
I mean, he's still an all-pro.
Yes.
And he's a Baylor guy, so he should have some chance. That's kind of hard to say with a straight face.
Right, no kidding. But, yeah, I like the Whedon point, Whedon-Hoyer point is well taken.
Mixon, they're loaded. This draft is loaded at running back, and so if the Chiefs get one pretty early, and Mixon would be a good choice, and I think he will win his case.
Yeah, I don't remember what exactly the terms of that are, but I watched the video, and this is kind of gross to say, but like the video of Mixon's incident is not the same type of violence that we've heard from Tyreek Hill's story. So I think I see where you're coming from on that. And then what you got on K-State?
Well, plus, since when she put her hands on each side of his neck,
right,
he had no idea what she was going to do.
Right.
As far as Kansas State, I didn't have any hope for them, but then I realized they played 11 games against current top 25 teams, which
yeah.
is the most of any. More than Syracuse, more than Wake Forest, more than anybody else.
Yeah.
So there could be a shot, but...
No, I agree. And Storyteller, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. No, I think K-State has a really good case to make for making the tournament at this point. I said that they needed to beat Baylor. Last week I said they've got to win their first round game. And they beat Baylor and ended up losing to West Virginia. I think that's enough to continue to make that argument of them getting into the tournament, because they've played so many games against top-level teams, so many games in the Big 12, more or less held their own. They're obviously, they're pretty clearly now, you know, that in the bottom half of the Big 12, but the very top of it, obviously, they're the sixth best team in the Big 12. That seems very clear now. That has kind of fluctuated throughout the year, but I think now we know exactly where they stand. The highs of K-State are going to be higher than the ceiling for a team like Illinois State or whatever those other bubble teams are. The bubble teams from the Missouri Valley and that level of royalty as far as conferences go. I know we all like to see the mid-majors. I know we like to see a chance for a VCU to make a run. But if you really are going to go for the best team, the best teams, and teams that have a chance of actually roping together a few wins in a row, a team like K-State has a really strong case to make. They've got a lot. They have the most games against top 25 teams in the country, according to what Storyteller just said. Plus, they've got plenty of wins from that category as well. I think they do end up making the tournament. Charlie?
I agree. I mean, that Baylor win pretty much did it.
Nah, I mean, who called? Again, once again, Charlie on the phone. I hate it whenever people call just talk to Charlie.
It really bothers me. You.
It bothers me because I want to know what they're saying, and I at first just start by thinking less of them as a person, because it's like they're calling to talk to you. Just talk to me. I'm not that scary.
He just wanted to know if there's any updates on the Perez injury.
Oh, okay. That's fine. You're allowed to just ask Charlie that question. I just, whenever someone calls in, because I've had this happen 1,000 times during someone else's show, someone will call in and be like, I hate this topic and this person and everything currently going on. This is the worst radio show in the history of sports. Goodbye. Like that, I mean, if you got a problem with the host, just talk to the host. We're right here. Don't lash out at Charlie. What did Charlie ever do to deserve your ire, your fury? Charlie's time cues have stopped. I'm not good at radio yet. Sometimes I feel like I'm doing pretty well, and then sometimes I can't hear the music anymore, and Charlie's no longer giving me hand signs, and I get really confused. Oh, there's a hand sign from Charlie. That's obscene. Put your fingers down.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
It was painful, awkward television, and I enjoyed that, of course.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. I'm Joshua Briscoe. I've picked up 3 Twitter followers today at JB Briscoe, so I'm gonna start giving out my Twitter handle until I reach like certain milestones. And like the only way that you can get me to stop saying my Twitter handle at JB Briscoe is to follow me at JB Briscoe on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Is that obnoxious?
And you just lost 5 followers.
And they're all gone. And my Twitter account just actually got deleted. I have 2 topics here to get to before the show's over today that I really like. So Charlie, we're gonna spin the wheel again. And it's either going to land on the NFL's drug problem or what is currently happening to the Washington professional football team.
Stop.
What did it land on, Charlie? You tell me.
Redskins.
Okay, let's talk about them. I told you this was going to happen. I really did. Washington is crumbling. The football team. Washington is a disaster zone. Cats are sleeping with dogs. People are leaving and getting fired. Everything that could be going wrong is going wrong. Everyone is paying attention, understands this is bad. Also, the football team's in trouble.
Anyway, the Washington football team is having every bad thing that could be happening to them happen to them, and I told you this was coming. They're now paying Kirk Cousins like $25 million, and now Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson are gone. As a replacement, they signed Terrell Pryor to a one-year deal. Did they also sign Ted Ginn? Somebody signed Ted Ginn to too much money. I can't remember who it was. Just, not even too much money. Just like, it's Ted Ginn. Maybe calm down. A lot of these receivers have moved. He went to the Saints. He was replacing Brandon Cooks. Good luck with that.
Which, by the way...
Oh, we'll get to the Patriots later.
Oh, gosh.
But, yeah, the Patriots are... I can't. Not yet. Gotta talk about Washington first. Washington is crumbling. So, Cousins is now getting paid a ton of money. He signed this franchise tender, but apparently partially because he just wants to be traded. He just wants to get out. According to Chris Mortensen, Cousins appealed personally to owner Dan Snyder for a trade, but was basically told not to get his hopes up, per sources. Also, they fired their GM, Scott McLuhan. Or a name very similar to McLuhan. They fired him, but then it said with cause, like they said, his drinking problem came back up. But there were some people who were saying whenever they hired him to be their GM that eventually they would fire him and say that his drinking problem was the reason that they would eventually fire him. That has happened. That person's a prophet. Washington's a disaster. At this point, though, what they should have done before they lost DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon was to trade Kirk Cousins. Because he is about to be the guy who we're going to look back on 5 years from now and say, holy bleep, how did Kirk Cousins get a $120 million contract with $70 million guaranteed? Who let that happen? And we're going to say, Daniel Snyder. And the other person's going to go, that makes sense. But this is what happens whenever you pay a quarterback north of $20 million. You start to lose your flexibility. You start to lose your ability to keep the players that have made your quarterback look so good. Are you interested to see what Kirk Cousins looks like without Garçon or DeSean Jackson? I am. I can't wait. And he shouldn't wait if he can help it. He should get paid. He should sign his deal before he has to go out and perform with an offense that is falling apart. Because he's good. He's a good quarterback. And he's not good like Alex Smith is good. He's better than Alex Smith good. But he's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Tom Brady. He's not going to be able to hold an offense together with nothing but his golden arm. He's a good quarterback who will use weapons very well. And you can make the same argument about everybody from Derek Carr to Andrew Luck. You can have really good quarterbacks who aren't worth $25 million per year. Now, Andrew Luck probably is, but I could fight on that one a little bit. There's a small handful of quarterbacks who are worth that kind of money, and Kirk Cousins isn't on that list yet. A very good quarterback, but not a guy that can create stars out of nobodies. Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson were real NFL wide receivers before they went to Kirk Cousins. Terrell Pryor just had a great season. Now he's going to Kirk Cousins. I want to know what happens to Jordy Nelson post-Aaron Rodgers. What happens to Randall Cobb post-Aaron Rodgers? What happens to Geronimo Allison post-Aaron Rodgers? What happens to Peyton Manning's guys after Peyton Manning? You think Dallas Clark would have been Dallas Clark if it wasn't for having one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time constantly feeding the ball to him? Of course not. That's why, like, Terrell Owens not getting into the Hall of Fame that Marvin Harrison's already in is absurd, because Terrell Owens did it with a bunch of different quarterbacks. Marvin Harrison did it with Peyton bleeping Manning. Kirk Cousins is a really good quarterback. He's probably a top 10 quarterback. But you can't pay that guy $25 million. It's going to tear apart your franchise. You're going to start losing the weapons. When you start losing the weapons, you start losing the guys that made your quarterback look so good. So Washington is already making mistakes, and they're going to keep making mistakes. If they could trade him away right now, it would be the best face-saving that they could do. Because right now also, it seems like Cousins has been upset with them for years now. He was upset with the franchise tag last year. He's upset with it again this year. At this point, I wouldn't be one bit surprised if he got to free agency next year and just said, bleep you guys, I'm going with Shanahan to San Francisco. Why wouldn't he? That's the guy that got him here. I'm going to go play for Shanahan in San Francisco. You guys can take a third-round compensatory pick because that's the most they can get from him. They can't franchise tag him again. They can't get a higher than a third-round compensatory pick. So they're either going to get one more year out of Kirk Cousins and a third-round pick, or they're going to work out a long-term deal on a team that is quickly losing its good players, or they're going to trade him to San Francisco and get a first this year and a first next year? A first this year and a second and a third and a fourth next year? They're going to be able to name their price. He's a valuable asset, and teams that are quarterback-starved are going to be willing to overpay for him. I'm saying you shouldn't be, but somebody will. And at this point, it's a real shame for Washington and for their fans because they're going to be looking at this team and saying, wow, we were like really close last year. Now we're rebuilding because we've lost our receivers. We've lost our quarterback. Our defense is falling apart. Well, I mean, this does not feel good, and that's a shame. But it's where Dan Snyder has left you. You've either got to sign that guy more cheaply, or you got to move on and get your next guy up. The problem was not drafting his replacement last year. If I had to be an NFL GM, if there's anything that I would say, here's what I'm going to put my job on. I'm going to be gutsy, and I'm going to get it wrong a couple of times. I'm going to get it wrong once, and I'm going to make the fans mad at me. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to draft my quarterback of the future every 3 years, and I'm going to get it right every 3 years. And here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to get it right the first time, then I'm going to trade that guy right before his contract comes up, and then I'm going to draft the next one. I can take a bunch of shots in the next one because I got a bunch of draft picks for the last guy. And then that quarterback is good for you for 3 or 4 years. He's Derek Carr for you for 3 or 4 years. Then you trade him before the big contract. Then you do it again, and you do it again, and you do it again forever. And a bunch of those teams are going to be real Super Bowl contenders because you're going to get value out of those quarterbacks. They're going to perform well enough. You're going to find some Russell Wilsons. You're going to find Dak Prescott. The reason that the Cowboys are going with Dak Prescott and not Tony Romo isn't just because of the age thing. That's a big part of it. Because of the cap number. Now, they're going to have to eat a bunch of Romo's cap number this year. But if you told me I can have Tony Romo or Dak Prescott this season in a vacuum, give me Tony Romo. If you're going to say Dak Prescott's fifth round contract versus Tony Romo's for like a $20 million cap hit, everybody on the planet is taking Dak Prescott there. You find Dak Prescott, you find Russell Wilson, you find Derek Carr, you find Teddy Bridgewater. You trade them away before their contracts run up. You go get the next one. I want to see a team try to build a franchise like that. Washington had a chance. They started it well with RG3 and Kirk Cousins. But then they decided they were going to try to pay Kirk Cousins, and now it seemed like he might just leave. Also, the Patriots now are doing something rare to continue just looking around the NFL at weird examples of polar opposites. The Patriots are trading four guys right now. They traded draft picks away for Brandon Cooks and for Coney Ealy. Why are they doing that? The Patriots don't ever do that. Well, I think it's because they see Tom Brady's window closing. They say, listen, we've got 2-3 more years to win with Brady. And then we got to go to Jimmy Garoppolo or somebody else. By the way, the Patriots are doing the thing that I just talked about, but instead of trading away their top quarterback, they're trading their second one for draft picks every time, and it's working. It's going to see how well it works whenever they have to actually replace Brady. But
it's a nice problem to have.
It's a great problem to have. And the Packers did it for a long time. John Dorsey would do that for years. The Patriots would draft Aaron Rodgers behind Brett Favre, and they would draft Matt Flynn, and they would draft. It's just, you got to keep drafting quarterbacks. But the Patriots now see their window closing. So they're saying, I'm going to worry about the future when we get there. We're going to have plenty of draft picks, and we're going to have a great head coach, and we're either going to have Jimmy Graps, or we're going to have the next guy who's going to step into the system and is going to make us all question Tom Brady's greatness, because he's going to be great in the system also. But for now, we're going to win with Brady while we have him. And now he's got so many. He's got the new weapon in Brandon Cooks. The defense gets better with Coney Ealy. They've signed other pieces as well. The Patriots being aggressive in free agency is really interesting, but I think you're seeing it for a reason. It's because they're not as worried about the future as they are the present right now. Ideally, maybe every team is doing a little bit of that and a little bit of kind of manicuring for the future. But right now, the Patriots have really sold out for right now. I think that's also very interesting.
I always forget how crazy free agency gets right around this,
this time of year. Oh, it's so
great. Another big deal was the Brandon Marshall to the Giants.
Yeah, sure.
That's going to be great. I bet Eli, he's already got OBJ to throw to. Now he's got Brandon Marshall on the other side. Man, be pumped. That was a great signing.
It makes a lot of sense because it really elevates what those receivers can do, and they benefit each other. So now Eli Manning has OBJ, Brandon Marshall, and every cornerback in the NFL.
This is Sports Sunday.
So Disney Channel's, you know, pushing their nonsense that all you millennials love this, you know, nonsense. That's why you guys lost the election.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I think that went well.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, the final segment. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Not the final segment ever, just the final segment for this week, you think. No one's told me otherwise yet. But I feel like whenever someone decides this show needs to stop having me on it, I'm just going to be killed in the parking lot. And I'll get dropped off in the little lake out there. That seems like the appropriate end to me in this show. Giving hot takes about quarterback value to my last dying breath. Earlier this morning, at like around 8-ish, Sean Smith, the former Chiefs defensive tackle, not the corner, the other Sean Smith, the one who was occasionally known to grab other people by the hump, he was on Outside the Lines. And they were talking about this new report about the NFL's drug problem. And God, it was really interesting. I cut down the whole interview. I pieced it together into about a two-minute segment. I know that 2 minutes is pretty long for most of our attention spans, be it millennial or otherwise. But try to hang along for the whole thing because I think it helps us to process just how little we understand about the NFL and what we're actually watching. And so again, this is Sean Smith on Outside the Lines this morning, talking about this new case against the NFL having to do with illegal drugs.
It's imperfect math, but with a 53-man roster, that would yield 109 doses per player per team. A 2014 league survey with 27 teams responding found that more than half of the active roster used at least one dose of Toradol each and every game. Sean Smith knows this reality from his 9 seasons in the NFL. What do you make of what has been out there in the headlines from the filing? I know you played. You've talked to us about this before. What did you learn?
Man, I just learned that it's heavy, and I'm just glad that the information is getting out about former players and even the current guys right now taking Toradol, anti-inflammatories, because, as you know, if a guy get hurt in a game on Sunday, we need him to play the next week, the following Sunday. So as soon as the game is over, if you have any type of swelling, they'll give you some anti-inflammatories to try to get the swelling down. But a lot of anti-inflammatories hurt guys' stomach, make them throw up, use the bathroom. It's not healthy to me. I've been on teams where they say the Toradol is blacklisted, and then I go to another team, it's not blacklisted. No, you could take it. Because at first I started taking Toradol, the pill, and then there's like, if you wanted to instantly get in, you got to get the shot. And I started getting the shot. I mean, don't get me wrong, it gets me out there to get ready to play, but then afterwards, you feel the effects after the game.
Yeah. One of the issues, road games, transporting these drugs across state lines. Was there ever a difficulty getting treatment or drugs on the road? And you're laughing.
I'm laughing because on the road, after that game, on that plane trip, they handle meds out like you had a candy store, like it's Christmas. Here's your gift. Even the night before the game, if you have problems sleeping, they used to give guys Ambien to try to sleep and take the anxiety away, but it was just like more so the trainer giving it to you versus the doctor. You'll see the doctor every now and then right after the game, and then the trainer will tell you later on, you need this, this, and this, and here you go. Yeah. Come see me in the morning.
I mean, does that not stick with you for a second? You're going to forget about it long before the first preseason game. You're going to forget about it before training camp. you're probably going to forget about it before the NFL draft. But I just I saw Sean Smith on the screen. Kind of like, oh, that's Sean Smith. What's he talking about? That's going to be interesting. Turned it up and heard that. Giving out Tordal like it's candy on the plane. He started off taking the pills, and they said, if you want to feel these effects instantly, you got to inject it. You had to take the shot. And you know, they give you the anti-inflammatories. We all take anti-inflammatories. We got a headache, we take an anti-inflammatory. But it upsets your stomach. Sends you to the bathroom. So then what do you take for that? They were talking about the problems that you have getting drugs across state lines, you know, because the rules change, I guess. And Sean Smith literally started laughing. Because I thought that's a joke. You're the NFL, you're on a team plane. So you get the Ambien elf walking down the aisle on your way from Cleveland to San Diego. What state lines? Since some places, some teams he's been on, this Tordal's been blacklisted. Other teams, no, it's not blacklisted, it's fine. Get you out on the field. He said, boy, it does get you out on the field. It sure does. Just like the Ambien the night before gets you to sleep and gets that anxiety to go away. We don't get it. And that includes me. I'm not preaching at anybody and saying we shouldn't enjoy football. We shouldn't watch it. You should know better. I don't get it either. I don't understand what it is that we're actually watching on Sundays. And now increasingly Sundays and then the next Thursday too. I mean, it's gladiatorial at times. I think I shrug at least. I roll my eyes at like the war metaphors that come out of sports all the time. Because you're not in a war, you're playing a sport. You know, I don't care how much Dwight Howard is going to give you a problem in the paint. You're not at war. You're in Atlanta. But whenever you hear a guy like Sean Smith, who spent, I think, 9 years in the NFL, you talk to a guy who spent about a decade playing the NFL, and later on in the I could have just played back that whole thing. It was like 5 or 6 minutes, and it was fascinating. I was hooked on it. No pun intended. I was so into it, because then he was talking about how he still feels the effects of this stuff today. The effects of the wear and tear, the effects of the drugs. And now he's a member of this class action lawsuit towards the NFL of this, I guess, this illegal prescribing within the NFL. I can't do the actual suit justice off the top of my head. But I just thought it was such an incredible insight into a piece of the world of the NFL that we never get told. We're never allowed to see. Certainly the NFL doesn't talk about. We barely got to this point with concussions in the last couple of years when we can all sort of see and the NFL can admit there's a concussion problem. There's a brain injury problem here. We've got a painkiller problem too. And it goes beyond the guys like Brett Favre who get addicted to the painkillers. It's everywhere. The numbers at the beginning of that sound were jarring. I do love to end the show on a light note. I feel like previously we've ended the show on like your science segment and then you cutting me off while trying to talk about women's basketball. Going to the NFL's drug problem wasn't exactly how I wanted to land the plan today, but we've landed it. And I, as always, have enjoyed this time with you very much here on Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My name is Joshua Briscoe. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Coming up next here on 810, SEC Championship Game? That's coming up next. And hopefully I'll be back next week to talk to you again from 9 to noon. Real laugher today. Thanks, Charlie. Your grouchiness really helped us. I know there's a lot of stuff in there, so if you didn't get through it all in one bite, I hope it helped get you through your week or maybe just through your Sunday. I want to say thank you to people who support this show through Patreon.com. Over at Patreon.com/RTK, you can support this show financially to really help keep it running. And these people have been doing it for a long time and doing it very generously. I want to say thank you to Randy Singh at Randy_Singh_, at Ray Hines at Big Turf Guy, and Andy Simpson at Andy5093-6831.
The $10 group is Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander. The $5 group is Josh Beadle and Ty Declare at Ty Declare 44 on Twitter. As always, you can listen to Sports Sunday from 9 to noon on Sunday mornings on Sports Radio 810, or I'll always bring you the podcast here on Arrowhead Addict and Blog Talk Radio. My name is Joshua Briscoe. If you have any thoughts or comments about the show, you can send me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. I'll be back next week with whatever's happening. Bye, Mom.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?